Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Film Club episode 18. That's right, 18. How it goes so quickly. In fact, it doesn't even feel like 2 weeks has gone since we recorded the last one. I don't know where time goes. It's crazy. Yes, this is episode 18. Of course, we're going to be talking about Beauty and the Beast, which we'll get into in a minute. But I am, as always, joined by my wonderful partner in cinematic crime. And the crime being just, you know, watching movies and talking about them. It's not really that criminal. Anyway, so yeah, episode 18, Beauty and the Beast, which was my pick last week. If you didn't listen to last week's, then you wouldn't have known that till now. And secondly, why not go back and listen to it? Catch up to 18. Of course, obviously, we're going to be talking about the film. So, as usual, spoilers abound. So if you haven't seen Beauty and the Beast, and by this I mean we should actually just refer, because I know there's been various incarnations. We're talking about the 1991 Disney animated musical extravaganza. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want it spoiled, either pause this and go and watch it or come back after you've watched it. But other than that, you know, it's fair game for spoilers now. You have been warned. So if you do have it spoiled, it's your own fault. So yeah, my pick. It's a slightly strange pick. I'm sure you'll agree for me to pick a Disney film to begin with, but Beauty and the Beast, a bit of an odd choice.
It was totally left field. You could have given me a list of thousands of films and told me that one of them was going to be your pick this week, and I would never, it would have been like right at the bottom of that list. I would have been like, Beauty and the Beast, maybe? So yeah, it came out of nowhere, but it's a good pick.
This is, I don't know about you, but this is the first time, I believe, and I touched on this on the last episode, I believe this is the first time I've seen Beauty and the Beast since it was in cinemas, which is like early 92 over here, which would be when I was about 7. So we're talking literally like 20 years since I've seen this film. But it holds up pretty well.
I think so. The last time that I watched Beauty and the Beast would have been, I think I must have watched it on VHS, that old little contraption.
That old thing.
Yeah, that old thing. I was probably 7 as well. Yeah, it would have been mid, late 90s when I watched it. So, I mean, I really didn't remember anything about Beauty and the Beast. I mean, there's a few iconic scenes which I've probably picked up. Mm-hmm. From various places as I've grown older, but for the most part, I really didn't remember it. But, I mean, it's timeless, which is kind of the cool thing. I mean, it doesn't really matter what age you watch it, it doesn't really matter when you watch it. It's something that I think still resonates today as much as it did back in 1991, 1992 when it came out.
Yeah, definitely. One of the reasons I picked it in particular because it had been an animated film is obviously animation has, you know, come on leaps and bounds. And I was kind of interested to see how a sort of film like Beauty and the Beast kind of, if it can indeed hold its ground today. And I would say it does for the most part. I mean, obviously the animation is pretty dated, but there's almost like a charm about that. I don't know. I don't know if you got that. But it kind of felt like there's a little bit of a charm to the sort of older sort of hand-drawn style of animation in Beauty and the Beast and old Disney films in general.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I think that's one of the appeals of not just Disney films, but of course of Beauty and the Beast, the fact that it is all so kind of quaint and, you know, it's all hand-drawn as opposed to the kind of Pixar computer animation innovation that they've brought into the industry over the last 10 years or so. It really is just this. I mean, it's quintessentially Disney as well. It's such a distinctive style.
Yeah.
And the thing that I like about Disney is that you can pretty much watch any of their films, be it Beauty and the Beast, you know, The Lion King, Snow White, and it's difficult to kind of, you know, understand when their films were made. You know, it could have been a film from the 90s, it could have been a film from, you know, the 60s or 70s. It's just kind of, they all, at least to me, feel like, not exactly, you know, they all feel modern, but they still, I mean, there's no kind of, you know, there's no kind of era that you can pin on each Disney film. You know, no. You can't say that Beauty and the Beast is a 90s Disney film. You can't say that, for example, I think Dumbo, was it 50s or 40s Disney film? Like, for me, they all just seem to roll seamlessly into one. Mm-hmm. And so it is kind of dated, but, I mean, just to go back to what I said, I also think that style is so timeless. I don't think, you know, even in 30, 40 years from now, kids are going to, you know, feel that they're watching something old. it still, I think, will continue, like I said, to resonate with people.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you look at it in a similar way to how you look at how films of like the 50s and the 60s were made. You know, techniques, abilities, and what you can do with film, obviously, in the modern era now has come on leaps and bounds. But I mean, you watch any film from those eras, and you can, pretty much like this, you can actually admire the craft that's gone into it. Hello? Are you there? I think we may have lost Dan. I think he may have just stormed out. I don't know. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, are you there?
Oh, there you are. You just cough at the end. You might have to edit this out a little bit, sorry. I heard admire the craft.
Yeah, that's about where I cut off. Sorry, listeners, for the slight strange edit in this, but we seem to have lost each other in space and time for a moment. That's the joys of Skype. But yeah, I mean, you can look at this film and it's not glossy and it's not shiny, but you can definitely sit and admire the craft. And you think that, you know, it came out, what, 91, 92? It makes you wonder how long it actually took to complete a film like that, because it will have literally been, you know, sketched out by hand, and obviously techniques weren't quite as advanced. So even though it's a little bit more simpler in its aesthetics, say, you can actually really sort of appreciate the time and detail and attention that's gone into it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, just the sheer level of work that must have gone into something like Beauty and the Beast, like every line of every drawing, and it's so well done as well. I mean, as much as I love what Pixar brought to like the animation genre in terms of innovation, I think for me, this kind of animation will always be my favorite, because, I mean, of course, it'll take a lot of work to make something like The Incredibles or Wall-E or Toy Story. Of course, I'm not saying that that's not hard work, but you just see every nuance of the craft in this kind of animation, you know, everything from the background design right through to kind of the very subtle details on the characters. It's just such great animation work. And I mean, across the board as well, it's not just the drawing, but the colours are something that I noticed watching Beauty and the Beast. There's such brilliant colours that they use this. It seems like such a little thing, but it adds so much to the experience of watching it.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice to see a kind of, because I watched the Blu-ray version of it, so it was actually quite nice to see a little bit more life restored into it. You know, it's kind of interesting to see sort of old meets new and see how technology can enhance it a little bit. But it just kind of, it's not like it was putting something that wasn't there to begin with. It's just kind of like drawing it closer to the surface.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, film always has to kind of move on. I mean, wasn't Beauty and the Beast released in 3D as well, like recently?
Yeah, I think like the tail end of last year at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that, you know, it will still continue to be popular with, you know, kids going into films today, you know, it, regardless of whether it's, you know, the hand-drawn animation of the 90s or whether it's kind of enhanced by 3D. I mean, of course it has to move along, but it's great that, you know, there's still outlets for which it will be popular to modern viewers.
Absolutely, and the thing is, you look at how sort of inspirational it is. I mean, you just have to look at Studio Ghibli. For example, they still stick to hand-drawn styles of animation, and you know they have the means and the ability to, but it's obviously something that they believe in, and it's something that really works, and there is just a genuine charm about it, and there's just a sort of real lovable factor about it, you know. It's literally kind of like watching something come to life, and it's pretty amazing. For the film itself, It's interesting because I liked it for the majority. There's bits I didn't like, which I'll touch on in a bit, but one thing I liked straight from the off is that it takes no time to kind of introduce its characters and tell you exactly what they're about within, like, the first 10 seconds. Like, you get a real sense of character from so many characters in the film straight away. Like, for example, Belle straight away comes off as just really endearing and kind and sweet, right away, and you know that's who she is, and instantly, it's kind of nice. I mean, don't get me wrong, I do love a good bit of character progression, and I like characters to grow and change, and there is bits of that in the film, but sometimes it's nice just to be kind of like, here you go, this is what this person's all about, and you kind of instantly know exactly what she's like, and the same goes for Gaston. Instantly, you know the guy's a douche.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing about Beauty and the Beast, though, the fact that, it's just, I mean, the characters are so likable, and immediately they come off very likable. I mean, in specifically Beauty and the Beast, I mean, Gaston maybe less so, but you get a feeling of who these characters are straight away, and as it's a romance story, you really do root for them right from the first minute that you meet them. You're on their side, and you kind of, as the story progresses, you want them ever more to be together, and that's really what makes it work. I mean, of course, Disney are great with their animation and a lot of other aspects of the storytelling, but kind of giving you these very amiable, likable characters is something that they've always been very good at. They have a great knack for writing great heroes and heroines.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and even great supporting characters. I think one of the things that really makes Beauty and the Beast quite an interesting and enjoyable watch is its sort of supporting cast. Like you have all the sort of humanistic house elements of like the dog that's meant to be like a foot thing. I forget what it's called. Lumiere. You have Cogsworth. They're all side characters, but essentially, they're quite quintessential to how the film moves, and it kind of definitely helps sort of shape its heart, I think.
I think so too. I mean, they are one-dimensional characters in every sense, not just the drawing. But they're so funny and quirky that they just add to the whole kind of tone of what Disney does. And I think that's what they do so well as well. There's always this kind of nostalgic feeling that you get in watching a Disney film because they just radiate kind of warmth, and they just have this real glow about them. And the fact that they have, these great kind of quirky, funny, kooky side characters, they really just adds to the whole charm of it. And I think that's what I would describe Beauty and the Beast as more than anything else. It's just such a charming little experience.
Absolutely. From start to finish, in all aspects, really, it just is a film that sort of oozes charm, and it's hard to dislike it. Like I said, I do have some problems. One problem for me being the fact that there's perhaps, and I know this was an era when Disney used to love doing the songs, and they've made, a huge name off making basically musicals, essentially. But I kind of felt like maybe there was one or two songs that could have been cut, and a little bit more sort of plot and maybe character development, but that's maybe just the more adult critical side of me that's watching it. Like, there's a part of me which is just in childish amazement, and it's just like, oh, this is lovely. And then there's a bit like me, we don't really need Gaston's song. In fact, I could use quite a significant amount less of Gaston, please. But yeah, I mean, did you have any issues watching the film, or is it just me?
Not particularly. I thought I would have some issues watching the film because I've grown up so much since the first time I watched it. And when I was 7 years old and I watched it the first time, I was just like, "Oh, look at all the pretty colours." Whereas this time, I know that I'm kind of going into it with a more analytical sense. But yeah, no, I really couldn't find lots of fault in it. I just think the storytelling's so good. I think, I mean, even I mean, it sounds like such a cliche, but in almost all aspects of this film, on every level, I think it works. You've got great characters, you've got great storytelling. I mean, it's almost this kind of classic Hollywood storytelling, and that I liked about it this time. It feels like something that you might have watched in, the 50s studio system of Hollywood. It's a musical, it's a romance. You've got this kind of these two outsiders coming together. It's got all the elements of like a classic Hollywood film. And while I mean, for me, Pixar will always triumph Disney for their innovation. I really like what Disney do because it is really classical storytelling, and that's what Beauty and the Beast is. It's just a classic story.
Yeah, I mean, the film in itself is, to kind of quote what you said before, it is a bit one-dimensional, but you don't really care too much about it. I mean, when I said I had problems, I wasn't sitting there going, oh, you should have used a crane shot there. Whoa, what's going on here? You can enjoy it on a base level, and I think that's what it's intended to, and I think that's why it kind of has lasted so long, and I think that's why Disney films in general last so long and kind of work by being reintroduced to younger generations, because there's just so much to enjoy. So yeah, sorry again, listeners, sorry if this is a little bit jumpy this week. Skype is just determined to kind of sabotage the joy that Disney brings. I don't know
I
what's
know
going on.
We love Beauty and the Beast. Apparently Skype doesn't.
Yeah. Apparently Skype is becoming a contributor in some kind of Terminator Rise of the Machines style thing. It's trying to voice its opinion through cutting us off, which is a little bit scary. But I'm not going to think about that anymore. So, yeah, I'm going to throw it to you.
Did you work on Skype or something?
Apparently so. Skynet and Skype, it's a little bit close for my liking. but I'm going to throw it to you. What have you got in terms of notes that you want to bring up about the film?
You know, I think I've really said everything I love about Beauty and the Beast, except for the fact that I really like the main character of Beauty and the Beast as well, Bella. Is Bella right? Is that the...
Yes.
That's her name, isn't it?
Yes.
Just lost my notes for a second. Because I mean, I do really like it. I know that I sometimes have issues when I go back and see Disney films of the fact that, you know, they were, at the time, probably not... You know, looking at them from today's perspective, maybe not the most politically correct in some instances. Mm-hmm. But I think in Beauty and the Beast, of course, I mean, it just helped that it's just a 1991 film. It's not one of the oldest films. But, you know, she's such a great protagonist. You know, she's kind of smart. She's empowering. You know, she's such a likable, amiable heroine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, can you class her as a Disney princess? Because I don't know. I guess she is technically a princess by the end, isn't she?
I guess so.
She, to me, is probably one of the most well-rounded ones, and most sort of aspirational, I guess. You know, she's a really good kind of role model for young girls that are maybe watching Disney films, because you see her and she's not glamorous at the start. She's very dressed down, very dowdy. She loves books. She's smart. She doesn't really care that everyone thinks she's odd. And I kind of like that, and I was like, do you know what, Disney, good on you. You know, you could have easily just made her this totally flighty, ooh, look at me, but you've actually made her pretty interesting, and you've kind of sort of fleshed that out as the film goes on a bit, so, yeah, no,
exactly.
I like
that. She stands up for what she believes in, she doesn't just want to marry the hunky, good-looking guy, you know, I think she's a good role model, she is a good aspirational heroine for the young audience that are inevitably going to watch Beauty and the Beast.
I do have a question, though. What if the Beast never turned back into a prince? Would she still love him? And would that be wrong? Because, you know, he's all animal. It would then kind of be... It would then, yeah, kind of be Beauty and the Bestiality. And then that's it's slightly wrong.
Yeah, that's such a cynical way to look at it. I was just like, well, she sees the inner beauty in him. Rather than the, you know, it's illegal, you can't have sex with animals.
And that's lovely, and that's a wonderful moral, and it's a great thing for kids to take away. But surely there should be maybe a tweak in the storyline where it's like, you know, just so we're all clear, it's good that we love one another for who we are inside, but it is still kind of wrong and certainly illegal to do things with animals. I'm just saying...
Like an alternative ending where she gets whipped away, like by the police,
exactly,
just thrown in jail, and it's like a PSA, like you can't actually fall in love with an animal.
Peter at the doors of the castle, like we've heard about what's going on here, and we think it's sick. but obviously, it's not sick. It's a wonderful love story, and for me, I'll pull out my favourite bit to end that talk about. Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
And it's where the film really kind of takes off for me. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like it and it kind of goes along. But there's a moment where it really kind of excels for me and it really kind of comes into its own. And it's when Belle first runs away from the castle and the Beast saves her from those crazy wolves. And he doesn't need to, you know what I mean? He owes her nothing. But yet, he throws himself into ultimate danger and saves her. And that's so sweet. And it's just like... Oh, that's awesome.
Exactly. And that's my favourite scene from the film too. Like, yeah. I mean, there's the iconic ballroom scene. But for me, like, that's the turning point for both of the characters. That's where Beast, you know, kind of really shows his true feelings for the first time. You know, shows that he's not just who he is on the outside. And that's when she kind of realises who he is on the inside. And I think that's like the sweetest moment in the film.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there you go, Beauty and the Beast. Totally strange and left-field choice for me, but I'm glad I picked it. You know, it's different, and I can say I enjoyed it. And hopefully you guys have too. But it's time to dip into what we're going to watch next, and it's not in my hands, it's not in Dan's hands, it's in your hands altogether in some kind of big metaphorical hand-holding ceremony. It's what we call the public pick. And if you've never listened to the show before, it's very simple. You can yourself suggest films that you would like us to take on in the near future, all you need to do is get in touch with us either in screeninvasion.com or at Invasion Radio on Twitter and let us know what films should go into what is referred to as our sort of film Tumblr. And I don't mean that in the hip sense of the kids' blog. I mean it's just literally a dirty plastic Tumblr in which I put the film titles in little bits of paper and then we give them a shuffle and we pick it out sort of lotto style. So we have a bunch of stuff in here, most of which I can't remember. I know, and I will forever remember until it actually comes out and the day we have to watch it, is Silence of the Lambs, which I know you're waiting on Tender Hooks to see again, because I know you love that film.
Yeah, the Russian roulette bullet.
Yeah, it's just a case of not if, but when.
To the command point to streams and hope. Mm-hmm.
But we also had two new entries this week of Clockwork Orange and Raging Bull, which, you know, I will not complain if that comes out. But anyway, here we go. This is the Tumblr box, and you can hear it rattling, and we're going to prepare for our next pick. Ooh, it's so exciting.
What's in the box, out of interest?
That is a good question. We have Raging Bull, Clockwork Orange, we have Silence of the Lambs, and I actually cannot remember what else we've got, because it's been building for some time now.
It can be a bit of a surprise.
So it could be anything, essentially. It might even be that Miley Cyrus movie, LOL, that you loved so much. It wasn't Miley Cyrus, wasn't it, that was in LOL? It won't be LOL. I don't think. I hope not.
No. Oh my god, I'm walking out of this show if it's LOL.
Oh, no, that's an interesting choice. Again, another film that I personally have not seen before. But I will probably be chastised for not seeing it because I know that many people hold it in high esteem as a great. It's Breathless.
Yeah! Oh my goodness, amazing. One of my favourite films ever.
I can honestly say I've never seen it and I feel kind of bad about that. Jean-Luc Godard, I believe. Is that right?
Yes.
That's right.
That is right, yeah.
1960. French mm-hmm. man. No, and yeah, Breathless or A Bout de Souffle, if you want.
Very
to.
Very nice.
Dropping a little bit of transcontinental language there for you. 1960, Breathless, Jean-Luc Godard, that is the public pick. I literally know nothing about the film. In fact, like I said, I've never seen it. I know nothing about it. So, I mean, do you want to
comment? I did my film studies dissertation on Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless, so this is going to be...
Wow!
If you think I'm pretentious usually, just wait until next week when I talk about this film. Yeah, to boil it down to as short a synopsis I can possibly talk about, basically there was this kind of... French cinema prior to the 60s was very kind of formal. It was very much this kind of theatrical art form that was kind of stealing very much of it, many of its ideas from the theatre. From novels, from primarily American cinema. And there wasn't really any kind of filmmakers out there, except for maybe one or two who were actually doing anything unique in French cinema. And so this bunch of film critics decided, okay, we're going to start this whole kind of new movement of French filmmaking, and it's going to be the French New Wave. And they set up this like entire manifesto of what they were going to do. Essentially, really low budget, kind of on the ground, you know, not in any studios or sets. And they would just make these it kind of paved the way for a lot of independent cinema. A lot of the films aren't driven by story, but instead driven by style and mood and character. And they do a lot of very strange things stylistically. I mean, Breathless is known for its very weird edits, basically breaking every rule in the book in terms of editing. And that's sort of what the film's appeal is. It takes all of the rules about what you should do when you make a film and totally throws them out the window. There are kind of tracking shots done on the back of, I believe, like supermarket trolleys. there's these kind of weird, like, as if you've ever heard, like, the 180 degree rule in like film, like in where you move the camera to, like it totally breaks out. And so it's this really kind of odd experience to watch it all kind of unfold in this really strange, bizarre way. But it's got this like two great characters at the center of the story. This kind of anti kind of bourgeois hero who's sort of rebelling against the system. He kills a police officer and he wants to run away from France with a girl he's fallen in love with who sells New York Times newspapers on the streets of Paris. And it basically follows those two characters and the conversations that they have. It's a great, great film. That's just a snippet of the pretentiousness that's to come, by the way. I realise I've just gone into so much detail about the film, but it's amazing. I really, really like this film.
Do you know what? I've just realised I've not seen the original, but I have... I have, however, seen the 1983 remake by Jim McBride starring Richard Gere.
Oh, nice. I don't know how... I've never seen it, so I don't know if it's any different.
I actually really liked that version. So that's a good indicating start, I guess. I'll have to go back and check out the OG version of it. But yeah, that's kind of weird, and I've probably lost, you know, respect and cool points and street cred and all the things kids give each other these days, except for venereal diseases, which I don't have any of those, thankfully. So there you go, Breathless, the 1960 Jean-Luc Godard version, and, you know, if you really want to, the Richard Gere version too, you could watch as well, and let us know which one you like better, I don't know. He is sporting a rather nice quiff in it, if I remember rightly. There you go, that is what you're going to be getting on episode 19. Don't forget to jump in and let us know your suggestions for the next round of public picks at screeninvasion.com. or at Invasion Radio via Twitter, or if you want to get involved and talk about any of the films, including Beauty and look for Screen Invasion, and you will see the Film Club forums right in front of your face. It's not hard to miss. And until then, it's been lovely talking Disney with you, Dan.
Thank you. It's been great talking Disney with you too. And I look forward to Breathless very much.
I'm
such a nerd.
I'm looking forward to your absolute uber geek meltdown come episode 19, because I know you're going to bring your A game. Yep. Yeah. So look forward to that, listeners. So go watch Breathless. Let us know what you think. And then join us back in 2 weeks' time for your next installment of Film Club. Hopefully with, you know, more obedient Skype. Yeah.